Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's iPros Clinical Strategies to Improve Patient Outcomes Shared Learning Session conference call. This call is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Vicky Aggramonte. Please go ahead, Ms. Aggramonte.
Thank you, Sarah. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for your patience. I'm sure you're all well aware that we were having technical difficulties with this call getting started this morning, and we sincerely apologize for that inconvenience. We should get started a little late, so you may plan on staying a little bit after 10. At this point, we're probably going to be finishing at about 10:15, 10:20, so just so you can allow yourself the amount of time it's going to take to complete this call. And we certainly don't want to miss this call because there's been a lot of planning behind it, and it's going to be a good presentation that we can all benefit from. So we appreciate you joining us. As you know, this is a part of our educational offering addressing our clinical strategies to improve our patient outcomes, our shared learning sessions. So today's topic area is going to focus on shared learning between two agencies that have demonstrated success in building a solid foundation of quality management that's incorporated all the CMS objectives. Just some housekeeping issues. For those of you who registered for today's conference call, you were forwarded a copy of this presentation along with the program evaluation, and you know how much we value your input, so please make sure you complete it at the end of the presentation. If you did not register for this conference, you can go online to our website, the www.ipro.org, click on Professionals tab, and on the Home Health Aid Agencies, then click on Home Health Quality Initiative, and scroll down in the upcoming events section, and right up top will be the link for today's presentation. Of course, as a reminder, this conference call is being taped and is going to be posted to that same home health section of our website under past events. So just to kind of take a deep breath and take some overview of where we stand currently, I just thought I'd go over some statistics with you all to kind of let you know where we're going with our acute care hospitalization rates and as well as our oral medication rates. So just take a moment to review this. Currently, for the reporting period ending March 2007, which is the most current statistics available on the CASPER site, New York State's acute care hospitalization rate went down. It's 40.14, and it was 40.31 last month. So we did see a little drop. Nationwide, there's actually a very slight drop. Our national rate this month for the month ending March 2007 is 28.58, and the national was 28.60 for the month of February. Our CIPG groups also took a nice drop, so we're really, really happy about that. For the reporting period ending March 2007, our CIPG groups, their rates are 38.18. Last month was 38.30. So keep up the good work, guys. We know how hard you've all been working. Now, our top New York State agencies, the top 10, they're reducing their rates significantly. Their current rate now is 16.69. Last month was 16.89. So congratulations to you guys. We know how hard you guys have been working as well. We want to take a moment to talk about oral medications. We haven't in the last few months been seeing the significant improvement that we've saw throughout the whole year, most of the year 2006 into 2007. So for the last 3 months, what we've been seeing is a trending downward. Now, remember, your acute care hospitalization rates go down. Your oral medication rates should be going up. And we're actually seeing them move in that opposite direction. So, again, we're reminding you of this because we know how hard you've worked on these initiatives. So not let this go by the wayside for the summer and have all that hard work just have to be redone in the fall. So anything that we can do to keep this going with you guys, we will. So please, you know you can call any of the home health care team here at iPro, and we will help move this forward for you in any way that we have to. Also, I just wanted to mention to you, too, during the summer months, now that you were also tasked with time, to really just take into consideration the resources and the tools that we have available to you on our iPro website, as well as those of you who have registered for the Home Health Quality Improvement Campaign, what resources are available on that website to continue having incorporated into your staff meetings, recordings, and previous recordings of topics that are necessary for you to reverberate over and over again with your staff. So, again, if you can give us a call, we can kind of guide you towards some of those resources that are already available. If we have some time afterwards, we will certainly love to update you on the home health quality campaign, but right now we're just going to jump into our program. We did get a late start, and I am pleased to have with us today two agencies. Our first agency that will be presenting is Dominican Sisters Family Health Services, and we have with us a quality improvement team of Linda Soll, who is the Director of Compliance and Quality Management. We have Barbara Costanzo, who is the Performance Improvement Coordinator, Mary Jean McKebney, who is their Education Coordinator, and Donna Cooper, who is also their Education Coordinator. So, ladies, I'd love to turn our call over to you.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you, Vicki. We're really very pleased to be here, and thank you for this opportunity to present some of our quality initiatives to our colleagues. Just a little bit about our agency on slide two. Dominican Sisters Family Health Service was established in 1879. We're a not-for-profit CHA, long-term home health care program, and AIDS home care program. We serve three counties, Westchester, Suffolk, and South Bronx. We have five different offices, and in some cases we have 200 miles distance between offices. So this has offered many interesting challenges, and one very positive thing recently that has come about is we have the use of video conferencing now at the agency, so that this has really improved our opportunities to have communication between our offices and work as teams using the video conferencing. We have an average census of over 1,000 patients, and we make 150,000 plus visits a year. We were identified as one of the top 500 agencies in the OCS Home Care Elite study that was done, and we are a premier participant in the HHQI, and we are also Joint Commission accredited. The success of a quality improvement program depends on agency's mission and includes commitment to the quality of the services it provides, as well as the support of its management team to achieve that quality. The participation and dedication of all our agency staff and the support and provision of the quality care is essential to achieving these goals. We're very fortunate at Dominican Sisters Family Health Service to have all these components, and I do thank everyone for their contributions. Dominican Sisters actually did not select improvement in oral medications as our OBQI initiative because we actually had other areas we needed to focus on. We also had other things in place addressing medication management at the agency, including compliance to the Joint Commission patient safety goals, which includes medication conciliation, verbal order read-back verification, the do not use abbreviation list, and then accurate lists and handoff communications. On slide three, there's a statement, the Joint Commission standard performance improvement 3.20 requires that home care agencies have an ongoing proactive program for identifying, reducing unanticipated adverse events and safety risks to patients that's defined and implemented. The goal of this initiative is to prevent adverse events rather than simply reacting when they occur. In the effort to integrate the Joint Commission and CMS requirements, Dominican Sisters Family Health Service selected to address medication management as our high-risk process to apply to the standard. We began in 2004 and studied the nurse administration of medications, which we'll not be discussing today because we're focusing on oral medications. Potential risk areas were identified by all levels of staff, and we discussed it at the PI steering and senior management teams and prioritized these initiatives according to high risk, high volume, and problem prone criteria. At the agency, we used the failure modes effects analysis, we'll be calling it FMEA. And this process is used to analyze and implement proactive risk assessments. The steps in this process are identified on slide four, and we'll be discussing them in detail. The educators will be discussing as they relate to the risk areas that were addressed by the team. But that's for your reference, the outline. So our educators will be discussing how we applied the FMEA process to our 2005 focus on nurse-prepared medications, and in 2006, ensuring the accuracy of the medication list for handoff to providers and patients. Our first presenter will be Mary Jean McKebney, the educator from our Suffolk office, offices, which will present how we address nurse-prepared medications. Mary Jean?
Hello, everyone. I will be describing to you our FNEIA process for the nurse preparing the patient's medications. And this includes the nurse pre-pouring the patient's medications as well as the nurse pre-filling the insulin syringes. Essentially, what I will be describing for you are the 8 steps of our FNEIA process, the way that we analyze our process for the things that could possibly go wrong, and that is on slide 4 in your handout. I'd like to start out by talking about our medication team. Like any successful program, it's really the team effort that makes all the difference in the success of any program. Our team consisted of nurses from our central office in Westchester, our South Bronx office, as well as our 3 offices in Suffolk County. Our team, in addition to having our Director of Patient Services, the Director of Quality Management, and our PI coordinator, we also had our 2 nurse educators, our 2 long-term supervisors, as well as 2 CHOP supervisors. In addition to this, we included our nurse intake supervisor, which we felt was a really important perspective to have incorporated into our FNEIA process, and our MIS coordinator, who was in charge of the implementation of our new laptop computer systems for our field nurses, was also a very critical member of our team. Last but certainly not least, we really wanted to have a good representation of our nurses in the field. And we had 5 long-term nurses as well as 2 CHA nurses who worked both in CHA and long-term. And we really feel that the composition of our team was very critical to its success. We wanted to have a good representation of our long-term program whose patients really required the majority of the medication pre-pours. So it was really the diverse composition of our team which allowed for certainly a more comprehensive assessment of our processes, as well as the identification of the things that could actually go wrong. And we worked together in redesigning a new pre-pour protocol process. So after we identified that step 1, our high-risk process of the pre-pour medications, and assembled our team, we were ready for step 2, which was diagramming our process. And this was very interesting. If you turn to page 5, you can see our flow chart of our medication preparation process. If this flow chart is difficult to read for anyone, please feel free to contact Linda Soule. Her website is located at the back of the packet, and she'll be happy to provide you with a copy. As a team, what we did was we diagrammed out our process, and we started from the beginning with our intake department. Again, we were just focused on our medication pre-pour, the nurse preparing the patient's medications, and what the responsibilities of our intake nurse were in terms of taking that referral for a patient who required a medication preparation. For example, they were required to verify all first doses according to our agency policy. And then we proceeded to the next step of our process, and that was what happens when the RN reviews the referral before making that start of care visit, and what are the nurse's responsibilities before that visit is made. For example, the nurse would have to verify that the meds are in the home and the patient has some kind of MediSet to make that happen. So we proceeded to our next step, and that was the RN making the start of care visit and outlined and diagrammed for ourselves what the responsibilities of that nurse was regarding pre-pouring medications. And the nurse is responsible for a comprehensive medication assessment, verifying all medication discrepancies, including all over-the-counter medications, with the physician, so that a complete and accurate list of the patient's medications is established at the start of care. And the RN is also responsible to complete the care plan, which incorporates the nursing intervention of the nurse pre-pouring the patient's medications. And the final phase in diagramming our process was, okay, what is the nurse responsible to do when she actually goes in to make that revisit? And we kind of identified two things that could happen, the medication staying the same and what the nurse is responsible to follow through with, as well as, well, what happens when the medications are changed and what are the nurse's responsibilities. As we diagrammed out our entire process, another component that we faced in doing this was looking at the fact that we had two different documentation processes occurring at that time. We had the paper record, and we also had a computer record because we were in transition going on to laptop. So by diagramming out the process, the team realized just how complex this process was and how beneficial it was to actually have this process clearly defined, so that it helped us look at our process in an objective way. So this really enabled us to go on to step three, which was brainstorming. So we looked at our process, and we identified the potential failure modes, or another way of saying that is what could go wrong in our process. And it was certainly the diversity of our team that allowed for the identification of many, many potential failure modes, things that can go wrong. And I have to say, this part of the phase can feel a little overwhelming, you know, identifying all the things that can go wrong and where you know, what you can do to begin to address all of your needs. But it was very helpful following the FAMEA process because it helped us stay focused on what we can do. And in step four, after brainstorming, we were able to proceed and prioritize our failure modes. And what we did was, with all the things that we came up with, we chose the high-risk, high-volume, problem-prone areas of these potential failure modes that were most likely to occur. And if you turn to page six, those failure modes are identified. And the team came up with these three failure modes, and they were medications that have not been ordered or delivered to the patient's home before the nurse makes that skilled nursing visit. The second one is the inadequate supply of medications to completely fill the MediSet or syringes, which we know can cause much confusion, and the medications in the home that do not match those listed on the medication profile. So after I prioritized what we were going to focus on are the things that can go wrong, those failure modes, we went on to step five, which was identifying the root cause of, or the why behind this could occur. Why could these failure modes actually happen for us in our process? So the team being able to identify, okay, why could this happen for us, or the root cause of our failure modes, we were able to follow through with step six, which was redesign of our process. And we identified areas of what we were able to do to make a difference in improving our process. And again, on page six, you'll see four of the recommendations from our team. And those recommendations were very helpful for us. Number one was, on the start of care visit, the nurse assesses if the patient is able to obtain their medications independently. And if the patient wasn't able to do this, the nurse on that start of care visit determined who would be responsible to ensure that all of the medication prescriptions are filled and delivered to the home prior to the next nursing visit. And the documentation requirement for this was that the nurse included this in the clinical record in our nursing interventions and identified who that caregiver was. Our second recommendation, on that initial visit, we included in our computer record two interventions under our skilled nursing problem. You see there, another term for that is just our care plan, and that is the skilled management and preparation of prescribed medications, indicating to the nurse that this will be part of the care plan, as well as ensuring that an adequate supply of medications is available for the next skilled nursing visit. And the nurse is responsible to contact the physician, the pharmacy, and the caregiver as appropriate. And because in our computer record we document according to our care plan each and every visit, this comes up and is easily communicated to all nurses. And the third recommendation, we really specify that the nurse is responsible to analyze the amount of each prescribed medication remaining for filling the MediSets and syringes for the next skilled nursing visit. And if the prescription indicates zero refills, the nurse is responsible to call the physician so that medication can be reordered. If there are refills left, the nurse is responsible for calling into the pharmacy, making sure that that can be done, as well as communicating to the caregiver who is responsible to pick up that med to ensure that the medications are definitely will be in the home prior to that next skilled nursing visit. However, we do know that sometimes that's not going to work out that way, and the nurse will be faced with an inadequate supply of medication. So our recommendation number four is that when that occurs, the nurse needs to document the specific medications, doses, days, and times that are lacking that she's not able to fill in that MediSet, and the correct number of medications that she was in the clinical note. And we also specify that only full doses are placed in the MediSet. So, for example, if the prescribed dose is 40 milligrams and the pills come in 20 milligrams, we never put a partial dose of a medication in a MediSet. Okay, and the last step for us was step number seven, which was the educators provided the staff with education on our new protocol for medication pre-pours at the small team meetings, and we utilized our staff nurses who were on our medication team for implementing the education as well. As I described to you the step-by-step SNIA process, I wanted to mention that through this process we also identified other issues along the way that the nurses were having difficulty with. For example, our long-term nurses definitely identified that some of their patients had inadequate pill caddies for their medication pre-pour, and our team researched all different types of pill caddies and ordered four different types that we felt would best meet the needs of our patients. And on the other hand, we also identified something we couldn't address at that time, and that was the nurses were having a difficult time accessing a complete medication list in our new computer system. So halfway through our FABIA process, we decided that it was very important to deal with this as a separate issue. So our nurse educator, Donna Cooper, will be speaking to you about this particular FABIA process.
Thank you, Mary Jean. I will be referring to slides 7 and 8 in your packet. Slide 7, I'm sorry, is very hard to read, but it does give you a rough idea of all the different steps involved. Errors or omissions could occur at any point in the process from intake through discharge, so we had to choose the most problem-prone areas. Slide number 8 does list the identified potential failure modes we chose to address. As Mary Jean was saying, at that time we were about two-thirds of the way into our transition from a paper to a computer record and had already identified common problems the nurses were having in entering and accessing medication regimen information. On the plus side, it was easy to identify possible drug interactions using the computer software. We no longer had to decipher some hard-to-read handwriting, and the most recent information was available to everyone quickly. But the downside was that most nurses were having a hard time trying to locate some of the medications in the computer. If they were unable to find the medication in the database, which is called MediStan, they were forced to use an alternate, more cumbersome method of typing in all the medication information in a clinical note and then taking an extra step to make sure that the information would flow over to the 485 or an interim order. If or when this particular medication was discontinued, the nurse had to remember to end it in a screen that was not easy to find. Also, this medication would not appear at all in the medication profile. In order to check the complete medication list of a patient at any point in time, the nurse had to navigate to a screen in another area of the computer called Documents, which drew information both from MediStan and the clinical notes. This was not efficient, and it was much too easy to forget because there were no visual cues. Another challenge was how to enter in more complex medication information, such as a tapered dose schedule, sliding scale insulin, and some of the injectable medications. Our committee decided on a two-pronged approach to the documentation problem. First, we went to our Director of Patient Services and the computer technical staff to find out what could be done within the limitations of our software to make access to the complete medication list easier. They were able to make a change in the screen layout so that a visual cue and quick access to the complete medication list would always be available. This change also made the printing of lists for patient education easier. The second solution was to educate the nurses on different strategies to find medications in the computer database. This helped them to speed up the process of entering the medications and to minimize use of the alternate cumbersome method of inputting medication information. The nurses were also instructed on how to efficiently enter more complex medications into the record and to include all information about strength, dose, and volume when listing injectable medications to prevent errors. The process for discontinuing medications and checking orders was standardized and reviewed. Finally, after the changes were made in the computer and all the nurses were in service one small group at a time, we needed to check on the results of our efforts. So now I'm going to turn it over to Barbara Costanzo, our Performance Improvement Coordinator, to tell you about the monitoring effort.
Thanks, Donna. In order to monitor staff compliance to the redesign protocol for each of the FEMEA teams, we initially performed record audits in the quarter following staff education. These record audits, which can be viewed on slides 9 and 10, focused on the redesign solutions recommended by each team. We have found it important to continually monitor compliance to the changes by incorporating the process monitoring in our ongoing record audits, adverse event, and medication error monitoring. Because there is a tendency over time to become lax in compliance to protocols, these ongoing audits assist in identifying areas which require ongoing education. And our agency has found it necessary to review some of the redesign areas periodically. The Dominican Sisters Family Health Service was aware that the focus on improvement in management of oral medications on a state level could affect the status of our agency outcomes. Fortunately, as seen on slide 11, we have been able to continue to improve our outcomes through addressing medication management using the initiatives described in this presentation. We have also found the information made available through IPRO and HHQI very beneficial in supporting this process. And Linda will now make some concluding remarks.
Improvement in medication management is an ongoing process. We continually monitor and reinforce protocols which have been established by past teams. Our FEMEA team for 2007 is addressing improvement in communication with physicians, which also impacts on the accuracy of medication and treatment orders. We've become more proficient in using the FEMEA process, and we find it helps keep us focused on the topic at hand. Over the years, we've been able to streamline steps without compromising the process. In addition to the OBQI process, we need to recognize the other initiatives that are impacting on the outcome improvements at the agency, and we find it's important to incorporate and coordinate quality initiatives to prevent unnecessary duplication and fragmentation of our efforts. So this concludes our presentation, and we'll be happy to take questions or hear your comments, Vicki.
Wow, ladies, I knew this presentation would be one of the presentations that we can really take home and really apply to each organization, but you really outdid yourselves, and I can't thank you enough. And Linda, as you said, you know, we need to look at our quality initiatives in regards to what we're already doing to kind of layer one quality initiative over another. And you look at them as separate entities is not helping anyone. It only, like we talked about a few weeks back, it really only helps to correct a quality problem for the short term. you guys have built a sound foundation for the future. And for something as simple as medication pre-pours, or what some may perceive as simple, having a process of this nature promotes accountability and certainly helps nurses and clinicians stay on track with what they need to do. So we're going to hold our questions for our group until after Annette's presentation. But ladies, I can't thank you enough. If you could please hold on the line with us, we'd love to hear some comments and questions from our audience.
Sure, thank you.
Oh, excellent, great. Okay, we have our second presenter, and I'm very pleased to introduce Annette Pisano-Higley, who is our Performance Improvement Manager for St. Joseph's Nursing Home Long-Term Home Healthcare Program in Yonkers, New York. Annette is being joined by Maureen McLean, one of the nursing supervisors, Irene McGlinchey, who is another nursing supervisor, and their patient service director, Gail Slater. And Fran Caggio, who is their long-term home health care administrator. So, Annette, we'd love to hear what you have to tell us.
Thank you, Vicki. Good morning to everyone. And we are very proud to present our integrated systems of reducing acute care hospitalization and layering upon layering of the oral medication management initiative into that and our adult immunization initiative. And page one of the slide sort of graphically represents how we as an agency look at each initiative as it impacts on the other, and in the center of everything is the patient. And the goal is to, of course, for long-term home health care, keep patients safely at home and allow them to age in place in wellness and in safety. Just a few words about St. Joseph's. I've had the pleasure of being the performance improvement manager for St. Joseph's long-term since July of 06. But St. Joseph's has had a long history in the Yonkers community, serving Westchester County. The hospital was founded in 1888. And as a community hospital, it diversified and provided services, really stepped up to the plate in terms of providing a continuum of services to the community, inclusive of course, the skilled nursing facility, medical social services, the geriatric unit, in the hospital, inpatient rehab units, Alzheimer's units, social day, mental health clinics, wellness programs, family health clinic, wound care center, medically supervised geriatric day program, and senior citizens housing facilities. The hospital is an accredited facility. We are Joint Commission accredited in our long-term care and in our long-term home health care program. Our goal, as I mentioned, in long-term home health is to support patients and families in achieving an optimal quality of life, wellness, safety, and independence in their own home environment. And as long-term home health care providers in the New York City area, we face many challenges. We serve a patient demographic that really parallels that of inner-city New York City in terms of most of our residents, our 400 residents, 400 patients are poverty level or below poverty level. We have literacy issues. We have chronic comorbidity that patients have not well managed for most of their lives. We have language issues. There are many, many obstacles that we face. Our acute care hospitalization reduction initiative was in place since January of 06. We weren't achieving the outcomes that we wanted to see, so we started to look at and develop a new failure mode and effect analysis in October of 2006. And that started with looking at adult immunization screening. What you can see on attachment one is our adult immunization screening chart record. I'm going to jump around because it's a lot of material, and so I'm just going to really try to briefly go through everything. We implemented a protocol of adult immunization to look at and screen all of our new admissions and all of our current patients to get a baseline of flu pneumonia immunization history, and to develop a tool, a multitasking tool to develop to improve communication with physicians and to request immunization status and administration. And that you'll see that on attachment three, attachments two and three, to introduce physicians to the quality initiative, home health quality initiative, and to provide them with a base of information that could be communicated back to us by fax or by mail to let us know the status of our patients. And results were tabulated. Slide six, you can see that we also provided information to patients, and I've listed several websites that really, really are excellent in, for use in obtaining materials free of charge for patients in Spanish, English. It really has been invaluable. They've been invaluable resources for us. 400 letters were mailed out to primary physicians of all of our patients. 161 letters were returned, and all findings were tabulated. We also tabulated the verbal notifications that our nurses received from physicians in terms of vaccine administration. And by May 31st, our numbers were that 160 of our patients received influenza vaccines, 35 patients received pneumococcal vaccines, and 16 of our staff members received influenza vaccines. What we tried to do at the end of our FAMIAs for acute care hospitalization and for oral medication management is to develop an integrated system that in its components would constantly lead back to other components of the system, and to use tools that were multitasking tools so that we could always keep in mind the full risk profile of our patient demographic and our interventions. We developed a high-risk acute care hospitalization assessment form that you can see on attachments 4 and 5. Initially, they were two separate assessments, and then what we did is to sort of morph them into one separate assessment. And the assessment also included a referral algorithm so that it became a resource tool as well as an assessment. We looked at our case mix analysis and incorporated our particular patient risk factors as well as the research documented risk factors for acute care hospitalization into the tool so that we could have an accurate and very, very customized tool for use in the agency to pinpoint our high-risk populations. What you can see on slide 10 is the system for risk identification. And once a patient's high-risk status was identified, it was logged and tabulated so that we could see, and actually I'm going to refer you to attachment 8, which is an Excel tool that we use that's very, very helpful in terms of being a sort of relational database tool where all patients are, it's an ongoing log of patients alphabetically with hospitalization dates, assessment dates, date of assessments, risk findings, fall dates, rehab intervention dates. It's our own customized auditing tool, which works very, very well for us. I'm going to refer you to slide 11 to look at our high-risk acute care hospitalization best practice. This is a very agency-specific best practice, but it has worked for us in giving us, culminating in a 7.7% decrease in our acute care hospitalization rate, total census percentage, as compared to last year. What it is that the nurse will provide applicable zone alert disease management, patient caregiver education tools, and other disease management handouts on admission. All of these tools are provided in our admission folders so that the nurses have easy access to using everything that they need to give to patients on that first visit. The nurse provides appropriate disease management teaching on an ongoing basis and documents all disease management interventions in the SN care plan and progress notes. Nurse will administer an acute care hospitalization high-risk assessment at start of care, resumption of care, first visit post-ER and within 72 hours of notification to them by physical therapy of high-risk fall patient status. The nurse will give the completed high-risk ACH assessment to the PI manager for review, and the patient is logged as a high-risk ACH patient in all of the system documentation, and we have developed certain F2 lookups to make it easier for nurses to do that, and that will print out on the 485, which also notifies the physician of high-risk status. On slide 12, if a patient is identified as high-risk for ACH, nurse will make the appropriate referrals and to include the referral algorithm as a part of the assessment tool, we find is very, very helpful for that. She will communicate the high-risk status to the primary physician within 24 hours, send a high-risk notification letter, visit the patient, and here we are front-loading, of course, visiting the patient 1 to 2 times a week for 4 to 9 weeks, and then there's a process to follow. All returned MD letters are given to the PI manager for review before filing. The nurse follows the 2-week acute care hospitalization protocol in the first 2 weeks following an inpatient admission, start of care, or resumption of care, and I will refer to that protocol. On slide 13. Once the high-risk status is identified, PI manager places the patient on a master high-risk log, and this is a communication that goes out to all of the professional staff weekly. This is a tool that that is integral to all of our case conferences and meetings so that we're always keeping high-risk status in mind when we're discussing any patients. And the nurse reassesses the patient. Once a patient has been identified as high risk for acute care hospitalization or oral medication management, they will maintain that high risk status until there is a significant change in condition, and they're reassessed then annually. And we find that this, because a long-term home health care patient really has chronic needs and issues that don't really change in terms of after a hospitalization necessarily or an emergency room visit necessarily, we found that this works well in terms of really establishing a basis of high risk for our patient population. The high risk protocol, as you can see on slide 13, and 14 and 15 for acute care hospitalization is very agency specific. It has a lot of impact on how we're doing, the specificity of what we're doing, and to just sort of give a recipe and a formula for nursing to follow. And just briefly, we're doing medication reconciliation. It's really everything in terms of meeting all the best practice standards for CMS and for JCO, and providing the best protocols and interventions for our patients. We're preparing medication lists, contacting physicians, identifying meds prescribed but not obtained, determining the patient's ability to safely and adequately administer medications, enlisting patient caregiver agreements in participating in the plan of care to reduce medication problems and issues. On slide 15, it's a two-week protocol. This is a second-week protocol. We're, again, going over emergency plans with patient and caregiver, getting recall, reviewing medications, continuing teaching, contacting the MD if needed, making the appropriate referrals. Our oral medication management needs best practice and protocol. We also have a two-visit protocol for oral medication management needs. Again, it's a guide. It's a step-by-step, very agency-specific protocol that we have found to be very effective. And in increasing our improvement in oral medication management rates, we have exceeded our agency target goal at this time for improvement in oral medication management rates, and we are at last tally at over a 39% rate. Our nurses are reviewing the patient's medication regimen for problems and reviewing it from the perspective of contacting the physician to explore simplification of many of our patients have polypharmacy issues. That's a contributing factor to acute care hospitalizations, med management, adverse effects. So we really are looking at educating our physicians and primary providers to simplify medication regimens. Our nurses do a medication assessment of the patient, and we use as a guide the medication assessment protocol sheet found on medquick.org, which is an excellent resource. Nurses set up medication planners for patients and do the teaching. We're teaching patient and caregivers. We're providing patients information and educational material. We are informing our patients and caregivers about common side effects, drug interactions. We're providing a med list that stays in the home. We're instructing on in our patients and caregivers in the administration of inhalant, mist, and injectable medications. Our oral medication assessment, as you can see, also has a referral algorithm attached to it. And that would be the attachment let me go on to slide 17. I'll discuss the best practice and we'll go back to the assessment. The patient is identified as having oral medication management needs. The nurse sends the physician an MD high-risk notification letter, which is the multitasking tool. All returned letters are tabulated. And the nurse follows a two-visit oral medication management protocol. Once the high-risk identification is made, the patient goes on a high-risk log. And the best practice is followed. Patients are reassessed whenever there is a change, a significant change in status, and annually. The two-visit protocol for oral medication management on slide 18. In visit one, the nurse reviews patient medication regimen. As I said, determines patient ability to self-medicate, and we have gone through the 12 steps. integrated into the medication management system and the acute care hospitalization reduction initiative is a high-risk fall best practice that you can see on slide 21. What we have is another assessment and referral algorithm on attachment 6, 5, and 6 for physical therapy. Our physical therapists complete high-risk fall assessments at start of care and post-fall for all patients. If patients are identified as high-risk for fall, patients are started on an intensive fall program and are seen for 1 to 3 initial visits and with a determination of what the subsequent visit frequency would be within 5 days of assessment. If physical therapy identifies the patient as a high risk, of course, it's logged on a high risk log, and SN, skilled nursing, is notified, and at that point, high risk hospitalization assessment is done as well for the patient. On slide 22, continuation of the fall best practice. Physical therapy documents all equipment ordering and receipt of equipment and patient teaching. The nurse informs the primary physician of high-risk fall status within 24 hours to look at interventions. If a patient, of course, is identified subsequently to high-risk fall assessment as high-risk ACH assessment, the high-risk ACH protocol, best practice and protocol are followed. Nurse and physical therapists conference on a weekly basis regarding patient status and equipment. And what we found in terms of improvement in status, as I said, our acute care hospitalization rate is down 7.7% from the previous year. We've met our oral medication management goal, and what we have are really customizable risk assessment and intervention tools that would be foundational to use in the future. And in terms of our adult immunization best practice, we feel that the amount of patients that have been immunized have really impacted on the reduction of acute care hospitalization rates in 2007. And I would just refer you again to the last attachment, the Excel log. It's a helpful auditing tool, and it's made available to all staff so that across the continuum of ACH risk, we can identify and discuss and develop interventions for each patient in terms of their individual risk status. I'll refer you to the key to performance in any agency and any strata is the investment of staff in the process and the motivation of staff in the process. We at St. Joseph's have a stellar team, and what we feel that is integral to the team is consistent encouragement, documentation of our personal bests, because numbers are relative, but every time there is an improvement in numbers, they're posted. Staff are teamed and conferenced and rewarded. And it really improves morale and serves to have team participation in the entire process so that it's not just a mandate or something that is adding burdens to an already very, very difficult task. It's that you really can see changes and you really can see positive outcomes. So we are extremely invested in all parts and all components of the system, and we are getting results. And I think that would be it.
Annette, thank you so, so much. First off, I want to thank you both, thank both organizations. And I failed to mention that both of the organizations that presented today are a part of our clinical identified participating group, and your work is completely stellar. Secondly, I want to mention all the tools that were in today's presentations, both agencies have given us permission to post them to our website, so you should find them there, and there's a lot of valuable information. Sarah, we'd like to queue up for questions.
If you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone. If you are using a speakerphone, please ensure that your mute function is turned off before pressing the corresponding digits. Once again, please press star 1 on your touchtone telephone to ask a question, and we'll pause for a moment to assemble the queue.
Great. Thanks, guys. And while we're waiting for the queue, I just really want to highlight what both organizations have been very successful in doing. And as I said before, being able to incorporate quality initiatives into day-to-day operations, as both of your agencies have demonstrated, is truly the key to success in building a solid foundation of quality. Secondly, building structure to the clinical visit. I can't emphasize that enough, and I'm sure by this point you're so sick of hearing us say the word structure, but truly this is what clinicians need. If I was a clinician practicing in either of your organizations, you know what, there is no doubt in my mind what exactly I need to do. And again, some of these steps may seem extreme, but think about it, guys. This is exactly what goes on during a home care visit, and taking the time to map out those steps I think is invaluable. Linda, I was going to ask you, how has your staff received this project? How are they feeling their success, and how are things going with your staff?
Well, I think I am getting the feedback from everyone that, especially since we had such a significant representation on the team, there's really buy-in from the staff because they can understand why we need to do these things. It's not just saying we need to do them, but because we've gone through the process of identifying the reasons, and people could see also that we worked very hard to streamline things and make it easier as much as possible, because recognizing all the complexities, and that we recognize that as well as they. So I think, you know, the combination, there's been a lot of positive feedback.
Oh, that's excellent. I can see why. And Annette, I wanted to ask you guys and your team, communication was a big theme across your entire presentation, and how you communicate patients who are high risk, how you've incorporated all risk factors into one tool. How has the staff recognized that level of communication? Have you really felt that that was part of the key to your success?
Absolutely. And it's very, very difficult in the setting of, you know, home care, when you don't have all staff available at a particular time.
Right.
You know, communicate in immediacy. But, yes, our tools really, I think, serve as communication tools to keep everybody informed immediately so that interventions can happen with immediacy. And that's really the key to risk management, I believe, here, our risk management program.
Exactly. It's having a real sound mechanism to communicate. Also, Annette, just highlighting the rewarding of the clinicians. Now, we know we all reward clinicians in every setting, regardless of who we are, but I particularly love that certificate, and the fact that it's placed in the employee's personnel folder speaks to your leadership support and how, you know, that support is quite clear in that one step in my eyes. You know, and getting that recognition, I think, is very important. There's, as hard as this job is, it's very easy to not recognize a job well done. So
we're very lucky to have Fran as an administrator, because she really has the foresight to understand how all of the aspects of the risk program impact on one another and what it means for the future, what it means for changing the culture of home care for the future. We have a stellar team of nurses, stellar social work staff, stellar rehab staff. After 32 years in long-term care, speaking for myself in skilled nursing facilities, it really has restored my optimism for long-term care for the future in the home, which is the future of especially in New York State, health care in the future focused on home care.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. Very well said. Thank you. Sarah, do we have any comments or questions for our teams?
We'll take our first question from Elaine Cannon with Visiting Nurse Service of Rochester, New York.
Hi, Elaine.
Hey, Vicki. Actually, I have a question from Brenda Bartok, so I'll let her go ahead.
Great.
I was wondering if you could tell me about your steps in your, you know, two-week protocol, your two-visit protocol. They're pretty detailed. Do you have these in some type of guideline in the visit? Are they a reference that they have on paper, something they might have on their laptop that they open up in reference? How do you get the staff to do all these detailed steps and know what they are?
Well, we do have, of course, the staff gets everything in paper. PI is really a paper process in the 21st century. But we also included in our admission folders the best practices, the risk assessment tools. So the nurses, you know, in addition to having it with them when they travel, they also have it in the admission folder to refer back to.
Okay, that's great. So you are on a paper.
This is built into the laptop to refer back to protocols completed and risk assessments followed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Sarah?
Moving on, we'll hear from Kathy Forsinger with Good Samaritan Home Care.
Sure. Hey, Kathy, how are you?
Perfect. My question is, I'd like to know what percentage of your patient population are identified as high risk for acute care hospitalization?
For St. Joseph's?
Yes, please.
Okay. Well, I'm going to speak to our statistics from January to date. What we have, and I will just get them to you. Okay. And this is an audit of all admissions, resumption of care patients from January. Out of 269 total patients, 122 were identified as high risk for acute care hospitalization, which is 45.4%.
Okay.
188 were identified for positive oral medication management needs, which would be 70%. And 105 were identified as high risk for falls.
That's significant.
That is. My next question is, with patient education for oral medications, can you tell me, how did that change your MU-780 question, the patient's ability to take the medications?
Well, what we find is that, you know, as demonstrated in our rates of patients who have improved in oral medication management, not only on discharge or transfer, but our, you know, long-term stay patients, it's impacted really greatly. We see better numbers, better rates of compliance.
But how does it demonstrate the change in that OASIS question? Let's say a 1 that they're able to take the medications, at to a 0 they're independent? Like they're moving up the scale on the OASIS?
Well, we find, well, in 39% of our patients, it moves up the scale for ability to manage meds.
Okay. And again, what a lot, Kathy, it's Vicki, what a lot of agencies have done as well is not only address the complicated MU-780 question, but have really done their root cause analysis to identify more of the clinical behaviors associated with that question.
Right. And I agree with you. It's really about the clinical piece.
Sure.
But I guess my confusion is with long-term, if you're pre-filling medications, how does that MU-780 get moved up to an independent, unless they're independently filling the box? And I guess that's my question. Is that what you're finding?
Well, we, you know, the population, our population is inherently a population that will never be, most, the majority will never be able to self-administer meds. I'd like to just turn this over to Fran Caggio, our administrator, and she can address it specifically for you.
Thank you.
Okay, what we're finding is that the nurses that are pre-filling the medication, we are actually...
Fran, I'm sorry, can you speak up a little?
What we are finding that the patients that we have to pre-fill their medicine, the nurses have gone ahead and spoken to the doctors in reference to maybe lowering the amount of medications. Most of our patients have anywhere from 7 to 10 diagnoses. They could be on 12 medications or more a day. They may go ahead and speak to the physician to see if all these medications are indicated. That's one thing. The second thing is they are working with the patient and having the patient in front of the nurse pre-fill the medication box. They're doing it together. This way, the patient is knowing the medications better, is doing it herself or himself, and it makes them feel good. And the nurse will double-check, sitting right next to the patient, whether it's done correctly. Of course, we have the patient that has multifocal dementia or Alzheimer's disease that will never be able to fill their Medi-Set. We will hopefully get the family involved. If they're not available, these are the patients that will never improve.
Thanks, Fran. This is Vicki again. And, Kathy, I'm kind of seeing where this is going to, and with a long-term home health care program, patients are not being discharged. But essentially, there are long-term programs that are discharging patients. And I think the trick is to be able to really capture that population and be able to demonstrate improvement that can be calculated on your OBQI reports. So, again, you know, these components combined, you know, can demonstrate this level of improvement, which we have seen in many of our long-term agencies, upstate and downstate.
Thank you.
Did that help, Kathy?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, great. Thank you. Sarah, were there any more questions or comments?
As a final reminder, if you do have a question or comment at this time, please press star 1 at this time. Again, it is star 1.
Excellent. Great, great comments, guys. I think we're all very interested in this level of standardization for our clinicians. Sarah, any other questions?
At this time, it appears that we have no further questions.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Gang, I just want to thank you all very much for your time and your patience through our technical difficulties. And please be kind to me on your evaluations and the amount of difficulty we had with this call. So, again, this will end our call for today. And our next call will be on July 11th. And we hope to hear you then. Thank you very much.
Once again, that does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation, and have a nice day.